Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to the Star Chamber Show, episode number 120. And tonight I'm joined by Daniel Dark, and in right in the nick of time, the man, the myth, the legend himself, Michael West. Good evening, gentlemen.
Hey.
What's going on, Stephen? You doing all right,
you
Michael?
I saw on there at the last second, Michael. Don't worry, I saw you. I was checking one setting.
No, I was sitting there for a couple of minutes, actually, but all I was doing was hearing the music.
Oh, wow. Okay, yeah, because that's the board sometimes lags a little bit with when it pops somebody up in the call column, and that's just that's just a quirk, I think, of the system sometimes. But we got you, so it's
ready
to rock and roll. And tonight, of course, we really want to thank everybody. Our listenership has actually been going up every single week, and we also have noticed a lot of you have been going back and checking out previous episodes. That's more than I've seen, before ever. So I really just want to say thank you. Thank you for checking out the archive shows, and, glad you have been enjoying our guests, and we've definitely had some good ones, and we've got a great one for you tonight. And, of course, putting up with crazy people like me, Michael, and Daniel, and, of course, when she's on, Holly. He's probably the craziest of us four. I can talk now because she's not on the air to defend herself. Get away with it a little bit. But what's going on, gentlemen?
Yes, but if she comes in the room, you're in trouble.
You'll hear her. I mean, yeah, before you see her. Holly's not ever been accused of being a church mouse, that's for sure. But she's I think she may call in tonight, because tonight's guest is actually somebody that Holly and I met, and we'll get into that when our guest calls in. But it's somebody that we actually met in person this past spring. So, Holly may chime in to say hi. What's going on with you two? How's the last week? Because I am just whomped, and I'll fill you in on that in a second. But I want to just hear from you guys. What's the latest in Westworld and Daniel Dark world?
Well,
go ahead, Mike.
Okay, well, Westworld, just busy as usual, just trying to work on the new novel and whatnot. Kind of on a serious note, I don't know if any of you have been keeping up on it, but a friend to Imaginarium, a former Imaginator at Imaginarium, Brian Keene, was seriously burned last week. And has been in a burn center, he of course, being a self-employed creative person who is not married to a nurse, he is without health insurance. So, expecting the costs of all of his procedures and rehab and whatnot to be in excess of $300,000. So there is a GoFundMe page that has been set up for Brian, there's also a cool thing that another friend of the show, Jason Sizemore of Apex, Brian has two solo novels through Apex, The Last Level and Return to the Last Level. And for the month of June, if you go to the Apex site, now you have to buy them through the Apex site. You can't download them for Kindle or iBooks or whatnot. But if you go to the Apex site and download the ebook and pay for the ebook, all proceeds from those ebook sales direct through Apex will go to benefit Brian's. Will go to help Brian's medical expenses.
Oh, cool!
Very cool.
And Michael, I just want to say I did not know about this. Actually, I mean, of course, I've been living under a rock, just with the work stuff I've been trying to keep up with lately. So I've not looked around to see what's been happening outside my sphere of tasks lately. So I did not know that happened. So if you can just make sure that we get me the appropriate links, and I'll make sure they go through every one of our channels.
Sure. I posted on the Apex story on the – it's actually been since this morning on the Star Chamber show page.
Okay. I'll find that.
And in that story, Jason has links to not only the two ebooks that they're selling to benefit Brian, but also to the GoFundMe account that's been set up.
Okay.
It's got a goal of – well, at first it just had a goal of 55,000. It's already at 53,710. So it's almost to the established goal. Now I don't know if they're going to do a stretch goal afterwards, since they're now getting an idea of what the medical expenses are actually going to be. It's just really cool for me. You know, when you're a writer, and you know, writers are very solitary people. We spend, you know, most of our lives, you know, with our heads down in front of a laptop or whatnot, just in our own heads. And that's why I've always enjoyed the convention experience and being able to get out and meet, you know, other readers of, you know, people who've actually read my work and other writers and whatnot. But it's just really cool that when a member of the writing community is in need, that people are just, you know, what do you need? How can I help you? You know, let me get on this. You know, there's already Christopher Golden has already mentioned possibly doing an anthology to benefit Brian, and people have chimed in saying yes, call on them. I'll you know, donate whatever. And just the outpouring of writers and of just readers, people who've enjoyed Brian's work. Just the outpouring of support has really, you know, it really get, you know, makes, you know, fills my heart with joy that you know, we have such a tight-knit community.
Well, stay on me tomorrow, because I will make sure that I get whatever links you give me that you recommend, the Apex one and the GoFundMe page, and I will get those. I'll get them in the Imaginarium channels, because Brian, of course, is, you know, was a much loved guest of honor with us and friend of the convention. You know, I'll get them on. I'll get them on Tamarco's media channels. I'll get them on Seven Star Press. I'll get them on Star Chamber Show, my own. So yeah, definitely get me that info, and I'll spread it as far as I can.
Yeah,
because that's awful. I did not know that, but I am also sensitive to that, because I am uninsured myself due to the glories of high deductibles and incredibly high mortgage level premiums. So these days, so I do understand, yeah, that situation of being vulnerable to, you know, something like that. So definitely understand the what he may be facing bill wise. That's definitely scary.
Yeah, I mean,
so
he posted a lengthy, I think he dictated it to someone. The main problem is that he's had multiple skin grafts already and whatnot, but one of his arms is almost completely covered in burns, and it's all bandaged up and whatnot. So he can't type right now. He's tried, you know, with his, you know, non-dominant hand and whatnot to do some things, and he says he can use his thumb on the bandaged hand a little bit, but he's getting some dictation software, so hopefully once that dictation software comes, gets hooked up and whatnot, he'll be able to do, but he's dying to write, and he can't write, because, I mean, unless he, you know, dictates it to someone, there's really, you know, he can't do it himself, you know, it's just he's, in the last week, he's just been through so much, but he and Mary, who was also a friend of the convention, you know, just they've just been through a lot, within this last week. So, but again, it's just really, you know, Brian's talked about this in his the blog post that he's made and whatnot, that it's brought him to tears, really, that just the outpouring of support that he's had over the last week. And he's just, you know, he just does so much for so many people. He's been heavily involved in the Scares That Care fundraising efforts. I don't know how many people know this, but he's a veteran who served in the Operation Desert Storm. So he served his country. He's done so much for so many people, and it's just nice to see that when he's in need, that people are rising to help out.
Yeah, no, that's wonderful. I mean, I'm just kind of like, yeah, wow. I mean, I'm just finding out about this from you tonight here on the air.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to start the show off on a kind of a bummer note.
No, it's important, and I would definitely encourage you to make that the top issue coming out of the gate, because, I'd like to see if we can maybe help direct a few folks to support this effort to help Brian. So that's very welcome.
To give you an idea on medical expenses, when I had my stroke, 3 days in ICU was $106,000 my cost. So, you know.
Yeah.
There's,
crazy.
You know, they don't show any sympathy, you know, for not having insurance, really.
Oh no, they'll charge you more if you don't have insurance. That's the extra dagger you get at you.
At least if you have insurance, the insurance companies will say, really, you know, a $12 Tylenol, mm-hmm. is that really the cost? You know, and they'll talk them down.
Oh yeah.
If you don't have. Mm-hmm. An advocate for you that can finagle some discounts or get it to be more reasonable, then yeah, you're stuck with the whole, you know, whatever they're willing to charge. You know, I saw a news story, you know, this was, it's ironic that I saw it right before this happened to him, but, you know, there was a news story about Lifeline helicopter flights. And how if it's deemed by the first responders that you are in need of Lifeline helicopter, the insurance company can come back and say, well, was it really medically necessary that they be Lifeline and whatnot? And so they don't pay the cost of that, and they don't tell you the cost of that up front, of course. So basically, the Lifeline people. Charge whatever they want, basically for the gas, for the chopper, and the whatnot. So I mean, there's people that are stuck with bills that are like the cost of a house.
Oh yeah,
because of these Lifeline helicopter flights.
Oh man, but well, we will get on that. So folks, tomorrow, please look on the Star Chamber Show Facebook page, Twitter feed, and then the ones for Seven Star Press, if you've got them, to Markham's Media, myself, and Imaginarium's channels as well. And you will see in all those channels, we will make sure that links for both Apex's project for him and then the GoFundMe page get into those tomorrow.
Yeah,
so,
and the Apex site, just so everybody knows, the Apex, you can download both of Brian's ebooks. It costs you all of $9.99. You get two great books, and you're helping the author. So that's a win-win for everybody there.
Man, wow. I'm really sad to hear that. So I got the chance to meet Brian back at Hypericon. And one of my very first conventions I ever attended when I had my first book out, and I just thought he was awesome from day one. And then we had the chance to have him as our guest of honor, and you know, and had a blast with him. He's fellow heavy metal fan, Iron Maiden fan, and stuff. And he's fellow bourbon fan, and he and I have a bit of common ground in several areas. So it was. Yeah, just a pleasure, and of course, you know, I love his work, and Yeah, I mean, he definitely, you know, I guess it's kind of funny to say it, but resurrected zombie. it's a kind of funny term, but yeah, definitely resurrected zombies out there.
I mean, nobody was doing zombie fiction until Brian Keene wrote The Rising back in the early 90s or mid 90s when The Rising came out. And I mean, basically, I mean, it's not hyperbole to say that he brought the zombie back to life. Basically, I mean, nobody was doing zombie fiction. Nobody was doing zombie stories until Brian. And since then, you know, look at the explosion of the zombie genre. You know, just in case everybody's on Twitter or whatnot, Brian, of course, because he can't type his tweets right now are you know coming as is, but Mary San Giovanni, who is a great author in her own right, but is Brian's significant other. She's been good about forwarding and posting and whatnot. So if you go to Mary, and Mary's been a guest of Imaginarium also, but if you go to Mary San Giovanni's Twitter feed or her Facebook feed, you'll be able to get, you know, updates as to how, you know, Brian's doing and whatnot. And to top it all off, one good piece of news for Brian is that Stephen King named one of his characters after him in the new book, The Outsider. Yeah, there's a detective, a hard-nosed police officer named Detective King, and which is just really, 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 you know, it brought a smile to Brian's face, you know. So so it's just again, and that was in the works way before this, you know, but it just so happened that one of the things that you know, Mary brought to Brian in the hospital was a copy of Stephen King's The Outsider, and you know, everybody's been quick to point out all the references to Detective Keen in the book.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that is so cool about Stephen King, and he definitely have to look at that as well, because that is majorly cool. But we'll get those links out, Michael, for sure. Don't worry about that. Just make sure, yeah, if you can, just get me the two most important links to each of those things, and I'll make sure they get in all of our channels.
Yeah, I'm sorry I would have done it to you sooner, but I just figured since it was all over everything that everybody knew. So
I really do live in a tunnel just to get done what I do. It's been that way.
You are so prolific. It puts me to shame. So, I don't know how you know about really anything that's going on outside of the you know, your pilot and the press stuff and whatnot. Just because you got the nose to the grindstone so much, but.
Yeah.
Speaking of which,
you almost have to be. Yeah.
I'm sure you probably covered this. Is this the first show since the premiere, since the test screening?
It's not far removed
No.
from the test screening was, June the 2nd. So, we've had two weeks since that. But last weekend I had the house filled with high-end computer systems and I had our post-production team, David Sheridan, Callie Jude, Eric Jude, all them. They were all here for the full weekend, and we were absolutely immersed in the final adjustments based off the test screening and what we already knew we needed to brush up. And we were just getting our final work schedule done and everything in good order and getting all that in place. So it was really quite a weekend. It was quite a weekend. So that was it's going well though. I'm really, really very pleased, and we got our final ADR needs out there, so we're should have them for most of the actors by this weekend. So, I mean, final CGI pieces, final Foley world soundtracks are coming in. So, yeah, we're on course. We're definitely looking to, right now, actively looking to set our premiere date toward the end of July. So hopefully
Very
you
cool.
can make this one, Michael.
Yes, I would love to.
It will be fun. I promise it will be fun. And if you stay long enough, you're likely to see me have a glass of bourbon in each hand, because I'm going to be so relieved when this odyssey is complete and we've got the fucker on
screen.
I bet
you will be. Yeah.
So
it will probably be akin to me going just crazy, swinging from the rafters when this book is finally done.
Yeah. Yeah. Indie land is very unorthodox, so it's a. It's definitely a harder process. I think in some ways you just have to wear more hats. You don't have the resources. So, I mean, you really get strained in ways that you don't when you have a much larger budget situation. Neither of them are easy, but definitely, I mean, you get pulled in, you know, ways that you don't that on a larger budget project. And it's definitely it's an odyssey. And like I said, you know, I think that people are in for a treat when they see, you know, what we have at the premiere. I really think people are going to be very, very, very pleased with it. So that's the good news.
Yeah, all the footage I've seen so far, I've been really impressed with. So,
and we'll have the number one film critic of Indiana, Michael West, hopefully get his verdict at the premiere.
Well, it's
the man
funny
himself.
Because, you know, it's like I don't think of myself. I used to write reviews for a magazine called Doorways that was around probably about 10 years ago. So I used to do reviews of films and Blu-rays and that. But I mean, I don't professionally do film criticism really anymore. But I'm constantly, every time I post my thoughts on a film, and it's just, to me, it's just, you know, just maybe a paragraph about, you know, non-spoilery, you know, what I thought about a movie, but I get so many comments, I'm like, you should do this professionally or whatnot, and I'm like, oh, okay, well.
Oh, I know. Well, you do a good job, Michael, I'll tell you what. I mean,
Speaking
I always
which,
read your paragraphs as like reviews anyway, so I'm already used
well,
to
yeah.
thinking of you as a reviewer, so.
Well, speaking of which, for all the horror peeps out there, if you like slow burn horror in the vein of like a witch, or if anybody saw the movie It Comes at Night, or even the movie It Follows to some extent. If you like, you know, the slow burn, you know, building dread type of horror movie, there's a movie that just came out last week called Hereditary. That is,
mm-hmm.
oh, it's so many good performances. And I mean, there was literally a moment that I have not seen this in the theater in a long, long time, if ever. There was a single moment in this movie where the entire theater literally, I mean, just a collective, like nobody could believe that it happened. And it was just stunned silence. and on screen the characters are going through a similar reaction, and it's just so well done and just
very cool.
It's really, really cool. And you know, I thought the movie had some issues toward the end where it got more traditionally horrific, but it's one of those movies where it makes you think, it demands that you think about it after you leave the theater. And the more I thought about it and made connections and whatnot, the more I realized that they really did a good job of laying the groundwork for all of that, just really subtly throughout the whole movie, so that it wasn't like calling attention to itself, but yet when it's all over, you go back and you think about it, and it just totally fits.
Wow. Well, I hope to see it, because I know Holly and I have been talking about going to see that one for sure. So past your test, I know it's going to be good. So that's good news indeed. But
yes.
Well, it was important, definitely. I mean, we definitely want to spend some time to cover the Brian Keene situation that, you know, that Daniel and I learned about tonight from Michael. And it's you know, we do want to get to our caller, our guest this evening. Sorry, our guest is on the line, and I met her with Holly back at the Southeastern Kentucky Author Event in Corbin, Kentucky, and she was awesome. And she actually included me in one of her online events the very first week. So, you know, she's a real go-getter who, you know, immediately welcomed me in and, you know, into the group, and because she was doing an online event promoting the event in Corbin that was already well established by the time that I was added to the lineup. So it was, yeah, definitely loved her vibe from the beginning. But she is a romance suspense author, currently also working on a young adult paranormal series under a pen name, Karen Casey. But she lives in Dayton, Ohio, and her romance suspense books are in the Amber Milestone series. And of course, I am talking about the one, the only, Colleen Green, who is now with us on the line. Colleen, welcome to the Star Chamber Show.
Thanks, Stephen. It's great to be here.
Wonderful to have you here, and Holly is going to join us tonight on the line.
Oh, good.
I know she just loved talking to you, has loved getting to know you a little bit since, and so I know we're going to get a bonus call from Holly, but definitely we got all kinds of things to talk about with you, of course. But first of all, you know, just for the benefit, I touched on it briefly in the introduction, but for the listeners who may not know you yet, I just want to give you a chance to describe your work in your words first. So go ahead with that.
Okay. I do write romance suspense, and like you had mentioned, I am working on a young adult paranormal. It's going to be a novelist series, and that won't be released till next year, but I'm so excited about it, and I can get into that a little more in a bit. And basically, my romance suspense style is a mixture of both, and it also has some family drama in there. So it has something a little bit for everybody, if you will. And also, I wanted to talk about the writers' groups. I know you had put that up on the website,
yes,
talking about the groups. And I do belong to the Write Writers of Dayton, and I also belong to the Miami Valley Writer Support Network. The Write Writers of Dayton is great for critiquing, helping each other, you know, kind of edit our work, and focuses on the craft, which is, of course, always helpful. And it's run by Ruth Ann Peck, and she's a wonderful, supportive lady who's been running it for quite a while now. And we meet at the Huber Heights Library, which is in Ohio, and Huber Heights is a city in Ohio. We meet there every Saturday, the last Saturday of the month, every month except December, because holidays keep people busy. But it's just a great way to network with other writers and get feedback. And same with the Miami Valley Writer Support Network. They're great for that. They also do focus more, however, on the marketing side, which I'm sure you can appreciate is really important when you're promoting your work.
Yes.
And any kind of entertainment business, of course, promoting is a big part of, you know, building your brand and your identity and your recognition. You know, so I'm working on that. I'm trying to, obviously, I'm doing an interview with you now, and that's trying to get me some name recognition so people will actually know who Colleen Green is. So, and some people do, don't get me wrong, but, you know, you got to start somewhere and you got to build it up. And so,
oh, yes. And we have good news for you. Our listenership has been going up every week, so we've been on the right path. So hopefully,
oh,
even more
great
people than even last week will know about you. So
yeah,
that is a good news bet for you. And then we love puns here on the Star Chamber Show. And so I love the way that you all spelled your writers group, Write Writers, WRIGHT. Like I guess I assume that's Wright State University reference. So that's
it is
that
correct.
Looks,
yeah,
because of Dayton. So that is awesome. And so, yeah, we love a good pun here. So that's always appreciated.
Yeah.
And I am going to go ahead. What the heck? I'm going to go ahead and bring this this dangerous individual on the air, Holly Phillippe.
Hello, everybody.
Hi, Holly. Hey, Holly.
Michael's
already
running
to
the door.
Oh, you too.
Yes, Colleen is a wonderful individual. You guys will love her. And I have sampled some of her her writing, and I must say it's my favorite genre. You know I love the YA. But, yes, I love her writing, and I highly recommend it to those who love YA or just paranormal, you know, in general. But, yeah, I think she's an up-and-coming star.
No.
Yes.
Well, that's the plan. That's what I'm hoping for.
Yeah. Well, that's
why we all try to grow as a tribe, you know. We all got to, you know,
right.
Help each other, lift each other up. Yes. Take the village.
Well, I know Colleen has yet to read the exciting romance scenes that Michael West has in his Legacy of the God series. I will see if Michael has any questions first about as far as like the craft side of things or writing process.
Well,
anything that he might want to.
Yeah, I've always told people that when I write a love scene, I approach it no different really from an action scene or a dialogue scene, in that it shouldn't just be there it shouldn't just be there gratuitously. It should serve a point in the story and it should convey something, you know, emotionally and that needs to be conveyed. And I was just curious how you approach it dealing with, you know, more pure romance type fiction.
I approach it similar, that it shouldn't just be thrown in there. You kind of have to build to that moment. And also learning just through reading other authors, techniques to write better. And a lot of it is very subtle. What can be romantic can be very subtle. It can be somebody holding your hand, whispering a sweet nothing in your ear. And even the moments up to where they touch your hand can be exciting, especially, you know, you talk about young adults. Even a kiss for a young adult book is exciting. So,
right. That's true. And then you got Daniel, who goes over the deep end. You know.
What do you mean?
Well, it goes way beyond just holding hands or kissing. You know, he goes
well,
a little bit deeper into that.
I mean, for the young adults, you're going to tone a lot of stuff.
Yeah,
down,
young adult.
But,
he don't write young adult. No.
Okay.
I write children's books.
Children's books. Yeah, right. Oh man.
But yeah, I feel that Colleen, and I wanted your opinion on this. How do you feel that the lines are getting? How do you feel about the lines being so blurred now with the YA genre? Because used to, you know, years ago when, you know, I heard YA, you think like middle school, maybe early high school. But now it seems, you know, the YA is stretching way further out to like, you know, people in their early 20s. And then you got people like me who like to read it.
Early 20s, my 6-year-old mother, that's about all she reads.
See? Well, I do too, you know.
She's almost 70 years old, and most of what she reads is YA.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So the lines are becoming blurred.
She reads almost all YA, so.
Mm-hmm.
I know many readers who are.
YA, it reaches a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
YA can
mm-hmm.
reach a lot of people, and that's the beauty of it. Sorry, I didn't mean to over talk anybody there. But yeah, it has a wide reach, and that's the beauty of YA. Is, you know, you can have a 15-year-old, a 14-year-old read it, and if it's written very well, you can have that 60-year-old love it too. So.
Right.
Agreed.
That's why I think eventually there'll be, I talked to Stephen about that earlier, there'll be subgenres of YA, you know, because.
Yeah, it could be, yeah.
Yeah, because you get into more of the sexual things, you know, that you can't experiment with as far as like middle school grade, you know, ages.
Right.
Obviously, it's not appropriate. But if you're talking about people that are in late teens, early 20s, that you can't. So, yeah, I think the genre is really outstretching. And then you've got people like us that are much older that, you know, love to read it too. So.
Sure. And,
well,
you
I
know,
think
when
that
I have
that
people.
Oh, go ahead.
Sorry, go ahead. You go. No, you go.
Oh, no, I was just going to say, I have noticed that, over the last decade or so, I mean, the genre has changed in that, you have more, quote-unquote, mature content coming into YA than you had in the past, for sure, I think. And, it's definitely evolved into more, for lack of a better word, adult situations working their way in. So I think that is what has given kind of rise to, I think, the middle grade genre as more of a separate entity than where in the past, it might have all fallen under YA. So that's just my two cents.
Yeah, and that makes sense. And the story I'm working on, the Witches of Blackstone series, I'm starting it from the perspective of, it's written in third person, so it's written from the perspective of siblings, and one of them is a sixth grader and one of them is an eighth grader. So fairly young. At that age, I can't get into much more than, a crush on somebody. But the beauty of starting at that age with the book is the kids will grow up over time, and over my time, my readers who start reading the book around that age will grow up with them, and then I can get into more romantic parts. So.
Mm-hmm.
I think that will work out,
Well, my question is, I'd love to hear the after Colleen addresses it, so maybe the co-host addresses too. But as far as the decision to separate pen name wise, how did you come to that decision to create a second brand, so to speak, with the pen name?
I came to the decision actually because I was at a book event and there was a lady across from me and I noticed on her banner she had three or four names and I asked her about the names and she said, well, those are all, they're one of them's my real name and the other three is my three pen names. I thought, wow, that's a lot of names. And she had it for good reason and the reasoning behind it was branding. So in other words, in the future, people who buy a Colleen Green book will know it's some form of adult romance, whether it's a sweet romance or a romance suspense or, lighthearted, what have you. It's a form of romance for adults. If they buy – sorry, if that was me, I don't know. I heard a beep. Karen Casey would be for any form of young adult that I write, whether it's young adult paranormal, young adult, that's kind of a – sci-fi-ish, if you will, but they'll know it's young adult. So it's for branding purposes. I don't know that it's necessary for everyone to do that, but I think it helps with the reader to find and recognize a book and a name with a certain genre associated.
Well, because we cover the topic of pen names here, and actually one person who relates to that is in our chat room, Kenzie Michaels, who also writes as Molly Daniels. And so she, she has she's got two pen names. But yeah, she's in the chat room tonight. But we do like to get perspectives on pen names because of what you're talking about, setting up different, almost like brands, or in effect setting up different brands, and why, why did you, choose to put that under separate umbrellas rather than the same umbrella? And that's. So, Daniel, go ahead. I heard you come in there a little bit.
Yeah, I use Daniel Dark instead of my regular name for two reasons. One of them, it sounds better for the genre that I write in. And two is, I don't know whether I want people just showing up at my door if they decide they, do or don't like the books that I write. That's one of the things that I thought about. But considering I write everything right now that I'm writing is all Victorian, I can stay in with one name, even though one of them's a cookbook and the other one has a cookbook in the end of it. But it's not really a cookbook per se. So.
Yeah, the good news is I don't foresee a lot of people getting irate with you about your catch-up book. I think you'll be okay with that one.
That damn catch-up.
The other ones, though, they may, you know, like or not
now
like.
Now, why? So. I think they're fantastic.
Yeah, Colleen's going to be so intrigued by the end of this, she's going to immediately go out and read Knife's Tale now to find out what the heck we're talking about. It's quite an adventure. Oh, man.
If she doesn't know what Knife's Tale about, you might want to warn her before she
warn her. Yeah.
Gets there. So. it's not YA.
It's not YA.
So.
Yeah. Not for the young of heart. Neither is Michael's.
Yeah.
Michael's coming to being YA than mine, I think. So.
Yeah, actually, I've been accused of my books being too much like YA. Not necessarily the Legacy of the Gods novels, but the Harmony books.
Right. Right.
Not that there's anything
wrong. Stephen just wrote one, so.
Well. Yeah, I'm finally getting a true full YA book out here soon, so
yep.
See what everybody thinks. But it's I love the genre. I definitely do, and it's definitely a lot. As a writer, it definitely gives you a lot to play with when you're working in YA.
Oh, it does. It's very popular, you know.
And it's so much better than what we had when we were growing up. You know, really. When you think about it, we went from the readers that you get in lit class to adult novels, and there's really nothing in between. You know, it's like one year we're reading Choose Your Own Adventure books, and then the next year we're reading Stephen King. You know,
it's true. It's really true. We didn't have all this when we were kids, you know, like middle school and stuff. You either, you know, got stayed stuck in a grade school level, or, you know, you were reading the King books. You know, I was grabbing the Stephen King books and reading all that. But, yeah, there really was no middle ground.
Yeah, I mean, you had the classics, like, or the Newbery Award winners, you know, like you know, Bridge Terabithia or
Valley of the Dolls.
Narnia. Narnia. Yeah.
Narnia would definitely, I think, fit as YA for sure. Most of the characters were coming of age. Most of them were children or coming of age. So I would think that Narnia could arguably be YA.
Yeah, and that's around the time that we were reading that was around middle school when we were reading Narnia and Lord of the Rings and whatnot.
People ask you what you're reading, Michael, and you could turn to them and say, "That's Narnia business."
Oh, dear.
There you go.
Oh, I couldn't
Colleen,
that joke.
See what, Colleen?
I can throw out a few Tolkien names.
Oh, man, that's good. Oh, man. But, yeah, it's true. Looking back on it, I can see what you all mean about, there's just a big, big jump right from the grade school stuff all the way to adult novels. And, yeah, definitely definitely has been good to see that gap filled and expanded.
Well,
and now just, middle grade and adult, or young adult, I mean.
Well, I'd be curious, what our guest has to say about this, about the fact that it just seems like there's a lot more freedom in the YA realm to tackle interesting stories. YA is, and to a certain extent, the urban fantasy genre is too. It's just wide open to encompass a lot of different stories and different angles. that, you know, you're not stuck in a niche just because you're YA. You know, it's like if you do a romance book, there's a certain formula that you're expected to follow. If there's a, if you're doing a traditional, you know, sci-fi book or whatnot, there's certain things that people expect. But in YA, you're able to experiment with cross genres and doing different things that you may not, you know, you're not locked into a formula.
Yeah, that is an exciting thing about YA, is that you can explore so many different storylines now, and you can explore a storyline that is in that spot that's like, you know, ninth grade through like 18, 19-year-olds, where, you know, that age range, like you guys were saying before, was kind of, you kind of jumped from Choose Your Own Adventure to Stephen King, and that kind of age range got kind of not as much attention as it is now, which lets the writer get into all sorts of storylines. So I think it's great to be a YA writer.
Well, it's definitely a good time. Definitely a good time for it. When do you think your first release will be out under the new pen name and with the new YA series?
I'm shooting for October of next year, which, of course, October, I mean, that's a given, a scary month, so.
Right.
And I'm excited about it, and, you know, the more I edit it and work at it, the better it gets, and it's just going to keep on getting better, and it's starting from a pretty good place to start, so it has a lot to offer. It has a lot of different characters. It has witches, vampires, werewolves, demons. It has teens and their parents, and they get into all sorts of trouble. And it has this sibling connection with the brother and sister who are really close. And just all sorts of stuff that I think a lot of people will be able to relate to within the book. A lot of people can relate to, if they have a close sibling, to being close with their brother or sister. And I just think people are really going to, both kids and adults, will really like the storyline that I've created.
Very cool. Well, you had Holly at Witches and Vampires. I mean, I know
yep.
you had heard of that alone. but October of 2019.
Yeah,
Well, Holly, that'll be the sixth edition of Imaginarium. Will be October of 2019. So we'll have to do something cool for Colleen when this book comes out at the convention and try to get her down.
I confess as a vampire witch. That's
there you go.
I dress as myself. I actually dress as myself. See, that's fantastic.
Holly does a great witch. As far as dressing up, she does a great witch. Oh, sorry, Michael.
I love the wine.
What did Michael say there?
I said, how is that any different from how she normally dresses?
Well, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, it's the norm.
Oh, that's
was
fun.
She asking how many books that was or something? What was it?
Oh,
was she asking
normally...
how many books?
Do what? I'm sorry, what?
Oh, go ahead, Holly.
How many books? I was going to ask her, how many books will that be in that series? How many books do you plan for that series?
I'm thinking right now it's going to eventually turn into at least three.
Okay.
At least three, yeah. I'm the kind of person who plots and, you know, I jump back and forth between writing the YA and then also working on my romance suspense. So sometimes when I'm deep into the plotting of the YA and the witch's story, I will actually jump a little ahead in my plot, but I do it because I get a good idea and, you know, I go with that creative spark. And so I've got it plotted far enough to say that, yes, it will definitely be three books, possibly four, who knows, maybe five. So
cool.
Very cool. Looking forward to this for sure. So
yeah, it should be exciting.
So
what are the names of your first books?
I'm sorry, what?
What is the name of the first book?
The first book is called The Evil Within.
The Evil Within. Very good.
Correct. Yeah. And then I don't know if I have the other named yet, but
Well, let's segue to the Amber Milestone series, because those are out, and we can encourage our listeners to go check those out and buy them. So let's talk a little bit about what is those are about and the kind of characters in them and how big of a series you have envisioned for that.
Okay, so the first book one and book two is out. It's on Amazon. And the second one, The City in the Middle, is on Kindle Unlimited and 99 cents Kindle on Amazon. And the first one's on paperback on Amazon, and I will have a Kindle version out in about 4 or 5 months from now on that one. And then also, I was going to read a very short part from City in the Middle, the book two, if that was okay.
Sure.
Okay. So this is just a very short part from City in the Middle, which is my romance suspense under the name Colleen Green. And I'm just going to go ahead and just read it. So I will start. A tremendous boom shook the ground. I heard screams all around me from people leaving the bar. Pieces of glass sprayed out in front of me as tiny pricks rained down my back. What the hell? Leo's eyes were as big as saucers. He looked at the blood on his shirt. All the color drained from his face. I started to turn around to see what happened. Fiona gripped my shoulder, stopping me. Not a good idea. Her custom-made outfit had been splattered with what appeared to be blood. She squatted and threw up to the right at my feet. I heard sirens in the distance. They grew louder as Fiona finished hurling. Fiona slowly got up and said, "We need to go." Blood from tiny cuts trickled down her face. "You can't see this, Amber. It's too much." Her voice quavered, and her eyes glazed over, then welled up. She blinked, releasing a tear. Seeing her absorb the shock from witnessing whatever caused that horrible sound was difficult. I began to weep, unable to bear seeing her in disarray. "Please, let's go to my car and leave," she said. "Right now." I nodded, turning. I faced away from Leah's car. She sighed, and the panic in her eyes faded. I wanted no part of whatever had happened behind us. Deep down in the center of my gut, I had an awful feeling I knew what it was. From the sounds, blood, and shattered glass everywhere, I was almost certain that a mangled body was on top of Leo's car.
Nice.
So that gives you a feel for the suspense in the book.
Very cool. Yeah, I know Holly has read a big chunk of your work, so I know Holly's explored your stuff already, and it's nice to get to hear a piece on the air here. And you you have a voice. You could actually do your own audio books too.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, you actually could.
You could actually do
that's
that.
That's good to know.
Yeah.
That's good to know.
But thank you very much for that. And I hope the series is going well, because I know that it's you alluded to it earlier, but the arduous process of marketing as an author and the exhausting process that can sometimes be. And that's actually how you and I first met, because you included me on when I got added last minute to that Corbin event, you included me on a marketing event to promote that event.
Right.
So,
right.
That's actually how we first met. We love to share those kind of stories a little bit. So talk maybe a little bit about what you found as far as that side of things, the non-writing aspects of the author world, the marketing, the promotion, and what works, what you think works for you, what you think's effective, your thoughts on that.
My thoughts are, once again, I encourage all writers and authors too to find those writers groups, because they're a great source of information, and the Miami Valley Writer Support Network, like I mentioned before, they're a great source of marketing information. And I did want to make sure to say before my time was up that I have links to all my author information and links to these writers groups. And if anybody wants any of that information, I have a business Yahoo mail account. They can feel free to send it to cgauthor@yahoo.com. And just put in the subject line, send me those links, and I can send you links to these groups if you are in the Ohio area, and that would help you. Also, if you just want to give me a shout out, that's cool too. And also reading books, I had one, the girls in the Miami Valley Writers Support Network you know, I was getting advice from her, and we were having dinner together, and she's like, right now you're in part of your career where you just need to keep your head down and write and read everything you can on marketing and just absorb everything. And so that's what I'm doing. I'm writing and I'm picking up books. I know Chris Fox has a lot of books out about different. He has a relaunch or novel book. He has other books too. I don't know if you've ever read any of his books, Stephen.
Not read any of the books, but I do know who you're talking about. Yes, I do know that.
Okay.
And but, Daniel, Michael, have you read any of those?
Which ones are they?
So Chris Fox is the author of the different ones like Relaunch or Novel, and he has Right to Market and some other ones too.
No, I haven't.
Okay. That's okay. It's just a source I like to throw out there. They can just do a search for Chris Fox and his books will come up on writing. But yeah, just, you know, in marketing, a lot of it's learning, you know, reading all you can and then trying it yourself and kind of feeling it out for yourself. And
Yeah, so that's what works and doesn't work for you.
Yeah, because I feel the landscape
changes
so often and so much. Things that worked
like
6 months ago, you know, don't work
now,
and the new things work. And then it's always shifting, and it's so dynamic, it sometimes drives you crazy. But it's,
yeah.
I mean, algorithm, and then they change the algorithms at, you know, the main sites like Amazon and all, and that throws everything off. And so it's definitely a chore trying to figure out, you know, what works at the time. And so insights, you know, as far as marketing goes, if you've listened to previous episodes, I know that you know, mentioned Daniel and Michael, that Holly and I, when we're sitting in the office, I mean, we have podcasts going constantly. As far as Holly loves Joanna Penn, for instance, and her podcast online. And Holly, you definitely could speak a little bit about that.
Yeah, Joanna Penn. She's great. Well, Daniel knows Joanna.
Yep.
He listens to her stuff too. She's got some fantastic marketing tips, and she talks to, you know, some of the world's best selling novelists from, you know, all over, and she stays updated with the current trends and the current, you know, what works, what doesn't work. And she's got several books out, but she does live webinars. She's got several things on YouTube. So you can actually go, her YouTube channel is The Creative Pen, P-E-N-N, she's got
thecreativepen.com
too. But you can also look for The Creative Pen on YouTube and actually watch several of the videos. But, Joanna's phenomenal. She's in England, I believe, is where she is.
She's in England.
I love her accent. But, of course, it's English, so,
you just can't beat a good British accent. I'm sorry. It's just great.
No,
listen to that all day long.
Phenomenal place for knowledge. Yeah, if you're looking into marketing and stuff, Colleen, please check her out.
Yeah, I will. Creative Pen, P-E-N-N.
Yep. And her name's Joanna Penn. Mm-hmm.
Well, a thought just hit me, and this is something that, you know, Holly and I have been actually looking into a little bit more, because it's definitely – but Colleen actually is affected by it, because she does have titles on Kindle Unlimited. I'm going to go ahead and get another kind of current event perspective from Colleen. Have you been following much about the book stuffing controversy at Amazon lately with Kindle Unlimited?
I've had them talk about it at the writers group, so I kind of got a little bit of a hold on what it is.
Mm-hmm.
And I think when it comes to the digital world, you know, unfortunately, there's always going to be people who use it for things that aren't. They use it for bad things, and book stuffing is one of them. I mean, to me, it's bad, because isn't book stuffing when you stuff your books to trick it to make you pay you more? Can you re-explain it to me?
That's exactly
just so clear?
Yeah, it's exactly. You take a title, one of your titles, and it's like you take and you market it as that title in Kindle Unlimited, and then all of a sudden at the end of the ebook for that book, you suddenly throw on everything else you've got at the end, so it creates this larger page count when readers read that, that trick the system into paying more out of the Kindle Unlimited pot. And so that's evidently been done to great success by some individuals, to the tune of, I think they said one, I read on a major media source, had one, was $100,000 a month they were making, Holly?
Wow.
I think we were looking at
yeah.
we were looking at that one. Yeah, so
but,
it was either
you know,
a publisher
me, yeah.
or, yeah, it was a, I think it was a publisher that did it, but they did the book stuffing and were actually, you know, clearing over $100,000 a month off because of that. So
but
the, so anyway,
yeah,
that, yeah.
That's what I would, to me, that's what I would call dirty money. It's money you've
mm-hmm.
gotten unethically, if you will.
Right.
And, you know, I couldn't do something like that and feel good about myself. I mean, I don't have it in me. I'm not that type of person. I couldn't do that. I'm Catholic. Guilt would just destroy me, you know. I can't. That's
right.
not in my nature. But, you know, with the digital world and with Kindle and with Amazon and with anything digital, there's always that chance that somebody's going to take that and twist it into something that's not good. And it's unfortunate, but it happens. And I don't know what the solution is. I don't know if they've come up with a solution for that or...
Yeah, there's been some talk that Amazon's about to clamp down on it a little bit. The only problem is that, you know, if Amazon doesn't affect them at all, I mean, they pay out the money regardless, you know, just it's how it's divided among the authors. And so there's no real heat on Amazon to address it more strongly. I think that's the main criticism that I've seen among the authors, and that, you know, the authors are the ones that bear the burden of it, obviously, more. And so that's been the big discussion that I've seen kind of going back and forth. But hopefully, yeah, they did have some kind of arbitration thing involving that that issue, and I think that it signaled that they are going to get serious about maybe cracking down on that. But as of today,
oh, I think
at least,
they will.
Yeah, there's still a lot of people abusing that. So, and again, that's a strictly a Kindle Unlimited issue. It's not
yeah.
affecting, obviously, you know, other platforms, but it's a big one. I mean, because
well,
like you said, it's definitely
it
taking
does
money
show who has integrity and who doesn't. To me, I mean, it's
correct.
An issue.
Yeah.
If people are doing that, then you know, I don't want to associate with them. You know, you obviously don't want to do business with them. So yeah, it kind of helps bring that to light too.
Well, we live in a world where, you know, they're always trying to game the system somehow, or they're, you know, we got constant lots of dramatic stuff, like when they try to trademark words, and it's got to be just every
yeah.
time you turn around, somebody's doing something,
right.
that, you know, definitely,
yeah.
as opposed to most authors that are just working to become better writers and market their stuff, you know, effectively and honestly. But it's, you know, it's definitely a brave new world, as they say. Because it's really, really the book world of today is unprecedented, I think, the today's publishing model. I mean, you really don't have anything to compare it to. So it's kind of
right.
Kind of evolving as it goes. And that's part of the art of it. But you as an author who has worked with Kindle Unlimited, I was curious to see if you had, you know, spent a lot of time, you know, worrying about that yet, or, you know, what your thoughts were.
I'm not worried about it yet, just because I'm a newbie to this. I have two books out. I'll have a third book next year.
Yeah.
I'm a newbie to this, whereas I think people who have been around longer writing are more concerned, perhaps.
Right. Yeah, because Kindle Unlimited itself, the funny thing was, is that really was a seismic change in the incomes of a lot of romance authors. I mean, I knew authors whose sales went down 50% after
wow.
Kindle Unlimited came in, their revenues, their actual hard revenues.
Yeah.
And Holly and I personally know of several that, you know, expressed the same thing, ones that were making very good money before that, you know, really got kind
mm-hmm.
of cut down. You know, the boom years of like 2012
right.
through 2014, 15, whatever, and then that, you know, that, as the, it changed. I mean, obviously things really did affect a lot of authors. So now that you've got this model, and now you find, you know, a situation like book stuffing, I mean, that's definitely another bummer in the whole equation. But I hope Amazon does crack down on that for the sake of authors like yourself. That, you know, I think romance is well suited for Kindle Unlimited model. I mean, so that, I hope they do clean that up for sure.
Yeah, and I think they're going to, you know, need to address that, and I think they know they need to address it. So hopefully they will get that figured out.
So, Michael, are you sitting in the background saying, well, when my next book comes out, I'm going to stick the Wide Game and Cinema of Shadows on the back? No. that's what he's probably thinking in the back listening to this. Hey, we need to do this. Oh, man.
Michael West.
Yeah. He's there somewhere. But see,
no, I don't know. I think he's gone. Michael West.
Oh, no. I hope we didn't lose connection. I hope we didn't lose connection with the man.
I think we did.
It
went to
times.
Sleep.
Yeah.
He may have went to sleep.
Or he's deep
we
in thought.
We lulled him to sleep.
We'll say he's deep in thought. Because this is a very interesting conversation for sure. And so as far as, yeah, let's touch on some writers group things as well, because I definitely wanted to get into that with your writers of Dayton and writers groups in general. And what is your advice and experience with writers groups as applies to new authors? Because new authors are always asking, you know, should I become part of one, or what pros and cons? What give us some insight from your experience about writers groups.
I would definitely say there's a lot of pros to them. The only con, in my opinion, is if you happen to go to a group and maybe you went a couple times and you felt them out and felt they're not for me, and then you might need to move on to another group. But that's just a temporary con. You know, go to different groups, get a feel for what they're about, you know, talk to the members, and you will feel a connection if it's there. You know, it's like, when I met you guys, I felt a connection that I could easily talk to you. So you'll feel that with groups too. You know, you'll go to a writer's group, you'll feel like, hey, this is the group for me. Or you may feel like, okay, I'm going to not come back, but I'm going to try a different one. So, you know, just keep trying and you'll find one that you like if you look, you know, long enough. And usually it probably wouldn't take that long even. Just go to a couple different ones and see what works for you. You know, writing is a very personal process, and every writer does it a little different. You know, you can get guidance from books, but you do have to get in there yourself and just start writing and find out, you know, what works for you, too. So it's just such a process. Everything's a process. Marketing is a process. Writing is a process. You know, it's that old saying, you know, life is a marathon. You know, you got to look at the big picture and just keep working at it, because, you know, I feel like if writing is your passion, you'll keep working at it, you know, whether I tell you to or not, because you love it so much. You won't be able to help yourself. You'll want to write all the time. So, and then find support,
cool.
Find support not just in writers' groups, but, I mean, I think in life in general, you should hang around people who are supportive of you and loving towards you and friends with you. And, you know, the people in your life who are hurtful to you, if you can limit your time with them, the better off you are, you know, because they're not going to help you grow as a person. They're not going to get you where you need to be. And, you know, I say that fully understanding that, you know, some listeners might be like, well, yeah, but I can't fully get away from them because they're my, you know, brother or sister or aunt, and, you know, they're my family, and, you know, you're going to have that going on. But even with that, you can limit your time with that person. So just find those groups and those friends and those people who will support you and help you along. You know, you can feed off that positive energy, and you can energize yourself with that. And, you know, I think that helps, and just not just with writing, but in life in general. So.
Yeah, I know on the show here, we've often kind of called that finding your tribe. And that's finding that core support network of people that, you know, may or may not be creatives themselves that do exactly what you're saying. And so that's that is, yeah, I'm glad you brought that up, because we can't say that enough on the show. I don't care whether you're a filmmaker, a writer, a publisher, an artist, musician, game designer. I mean, it applies across the board. And but with your writers group, I was curious about how large is it, and also who is in it as far as genres. I mean, is it a mixed genre group, or does it tend to kind of favor one, you know, or a very few types of genres?
Well, with the Writers of Dayton, there's a lot of poets. And there's also Ruth Ann wrote a book about growing up, and so there's different types of books there. And then with the Miami Valley Writer Support Network, I think they're mostly romance, and I think there's also a sci-fi writer in there. So I kind of get a variety of genres, and the beauty of belonging to two groups is I get different things from each group. I get something good out of each group, you know. So if you can belong to more than one group and you have the time for it, go for it, you know.
So I think one of the cool things for a genre writer is to have your stuff tested and read by people that are not genre writers, you know, as far as you know, if you're coming from it from like your paranormal series for your new YA and stuff, finding people that strictly only write, you know, like mysteries or thrillers or things of that nature, nothing involving, you know, the fantastical elements. And I think that's great when you can get one of those folks to really resonate with your work and sell the fantastical elements to them. And that's definitely, I think, definitely helps you hone your chops as a genre writer. For sure. So I think that's valuable to have that kind of a mixed genre writing group. And I think that does help writers grow for sure. And specifically genre writers in that case.
But, yeah. And, you know, I've heard some poetry and that makes me want to maybe write poetry someday.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right. It's always good to step outside and you know, stretch your legs a little bit per se.
Right.
And try something different. Yeah, and it helps you grow as a writer, I think, to try, you know, something new.
Right. I was just thinking, yeah, we haven't subjected Colleen to my hike, my King Oscar haikus yet.
We do whitefish poetry.
We'll let her wait until the next competition to see what I write for that one. But we won't subject her to that torture here on the air here. But it's...
Never know.
Oh,
I might like
no,
it.
No, seriously, yeah. I know exactly what you're saying. Yeah, we joke about my King Oscar poetry quite often because I just have fun writing haikus for this great canned fish company when they do a yearly haiku contest. And the prize is a pewter Viking longship is the trophy because they're a Norwegian company. So every year I strive to get this darn thing, and I've come in second twice, so it's agonizing.
Yeah.
I've come so
I don't get to go that far, but I did get a little award, and I've got it on the refrigerator. It's a paper proclamation, but I'm very proud of it.
Yes. but all joking aside, though, I do think, being exposed to things like poetry and things like that definitely fire the jets to you know, broaden your horizons when in your own writing. And that mix of genres in a group can benefit you so much. And that's actually, honestly, a big reason why we made Imaginarium in the style that it is, because I think it is invaluable to bring together writers of all genres, because they all have something they can learn from each other. You know, a fantasy writer can learn better thriller elements from a thriller writer. A mystery writer can learn more get some real good insights into, you know, world building or something like that from a fantasy writer. I mean, lots of different things can happen when you mix styles together. And that's so actually, you know, our convention has that tone too. So that's a definitely cool thing to bring up here. And So what is coming up? That's one thing we like to talk about is the live events that you have scheduled. What do you have? We got about 15 more minutes for the show here, so I want to make sure we cover this. What do you have coming up, and what's on the appearance schedule for Colleen Green?
Okay, so I have I will be at the Lexington Legendary Book Bash, which is in Kentucky, on July 14th of this year at the Grand Reserve, which is in the heart of downtown Lexington. And I will have both Book 1 and Book 2 in the Amber Milestone series there, and I will sign it for anybody who is interested in picking up a copy. And the event opens at 10 a.m. For the VIP readers and 11 a.m. for the public. You can get VIP tickets online on Eventbrite. Once again, if you want any of these links, I would be more than happy to send them if you send me an email to cgauthor@yahoo.com. So, yeah, it should be a good event with lots of variety of different authors there, variety of genres.
Yeah, we might be able to see you at that one because that's in our backyard because Holly and I are here in Lexington. So we kept July clean because of all the mess with our TV pilot, and we didn't know exactly when that was going to premiere, so we didn't schedule anything ourselves. But so we actually might be free that weekend to actually see you. So
that would be awesome. And if you are, do that. Yeah, I'd love to see you guys.
Definitely.
And I do plan on reading the I won't say it right. Your the pilot series is based off of your book called Raiden. Say the last
Valkyrie. Valkyrie.
Yeah, so I definitely want to read that book. So if you do stop by the Lexington event, you know, I would love a signed copy, and I'd be glad to pay you for it. So,
oh, well, there you go. We got one sold. There you go. It's the first in that series is actually Heart of the Lion, and then the second one is Thunder Horizon. But for the pilot, he did a completely he did a completely different screenplay for it. So it's not actually based on the books. It's just characters are from the story.
Okay. Raiden, but I still would like
Raiden
to read
is
it
the main
because,
character.
You know, right. And I, you know, like I've probably said it through Facebook Messenger or somewhere along the line, but, you know, I'm always fascinated with the movie and filmmaking and all that entertainment business. And I don't know, it could be because it's kind of funny, but my boyfriend loves to see the credits at the end. He'll watch all the credits, you know, to the very end. And I'm always like, oh, do we have to? They're so long. And he's like, yeah, I want to see it. But maybe it's by watching all those credits, you know, it's like there's so much work that goes into movies. There's so much work that also, I'm sure, goes into television programs and just the behind the scenes. And, I mean, I can't even tell you all of it because I don't know all of it, obviously, but, you know, the costume designers and the writers and the people on the camera and the editing and the marketing and, you know, you obviously know way more than I do about that, Stephen, but I just think it's fascinating, you know. I mean, what you see in front of you, everybody sees is the actors and the finished project and the CGI and all that, but, I mean, I just the hours it took to get to that point and the people that you never see on camera, but, you know, that ran the cameras all day and, you know, so it's just, I think it's fascinating.
Well, one day, I mean, there's more and more opportunity. I mean, no question that there's a proliferation of channels and outlets now for, you know, original content. So, I mean, yeah, so hopefully one day you'll be on set watching one of your projects being adapted to a TV series and or movie project. That definitely happens to more and more authors these days. So that's something definitely to maybe dig into a little bit as far as the getting into the process of it a little, because that's something you may find yourself exploring in the not so distant future.
I mean, that would be amazing. That would just be amazing. I think the Witches of Blackstone series, even though I'm still crafting it, I'm still writing it, I'm still editing it, like I said, it's just going to get better and better. And I've, you know, it's easy to say and harder to do, of course, but, it, you know, it's easy to fantasize and be like, hey, that would be cool as a Netflix series. And then it's like, yeah, it would, but, you know, that's a million miles away from where I'm at now, of course.
It's a rough road, I'd say.
Yeah,
I'm sure it's very rough. Yeah.
Yeah, the entry level, your boyfriend will be amused very much with especially indie projects, because he'll probably notice the reoccurrence of names. Because in the indie world, I mean, you definitely have people that wear multiple hats on the same project.
Yes.
And that,
but that makes sense, because you're trying to keep the cost down, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you have to. I mean, it's just a necessity.
Yeah, and you have to. Yeah, I totally get that. You know, I could totally understand that. And there's, you know, even within, you know, the business of making films and, you know, and in TV shows and pilots and all that, you know, you've got your different steps, and like you said, your rough road, and you know, then you're in the process of, you know, hopefully pitching this to networks soon, but you know, it's a very long process, and you know, there's, but you got to start at the beginning, and it takes what it takes, you know. So, but I'm just so proud of what you've done. I think you're just amazing, Stephen. And,
well,
you know, Holly, you're great.
Thank you.
You're just easy to talk to. And I think, am I not mistaken, Holly, you do help with Stephen on the set, too?
She's definitely
I'm a producer, and, I wear many hats.
I have a little cameo, too.
I have a little cameo running through the woods, and you don't see my face, but yeah, you see my back. But yeah, I was right there with him. Well, you know, we worked tirelessly and we planned everything. And yeah, I did casting. I helped with, you know, casting. And yeah, you do. You wear many hats. And along with Stephen and I running the press and, you know, take care of his stuff, because he's also a writer. And, you know, all the other thousand things we do. And yeah, it's definitely a busy life. But persistence pays off, Colleen. That's what you got to keep
I'm
in the
sure.
back of your head.
Yes. For sure.
Stay persistent. Yep. That's the main thing, and that's what we tell people. Just stay persistent.
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And you could see your goals, live through. Yes. Some people give up way too early, and you gotta stay in there.
And kudos to the people who have the guts to step into the arena. I mean, lots of people can hurl a lot of insults and crap from the sidelines, but the people that have the guts to actually get into the arena and put your stuff out there and, you know, be vulnerable and know that you are going to get criticized or this or that. I mean, power to help those folks. You know, I mean, it's not an easy thing, especially for a lot of introverted, you know, artists to do. And it's it takes guts to do that, you know. And so, yeah, it's easy to insult people, but it takes a little bit of something to lay your heart out there in your work and put it out there. So, I mean, that's something I know that everybody talking here can understand.
Right, definitely.
Well, one of the things that I listened to today was a guy talking about, you know, there's a lot of people that want to write a book and think that they are ready to write a book and everything, but they never do complete it. And, you know, to get to the point of where you're saying that you're going to write a book and you actually complete that book, you've accomplished something right there.
Mm-hmm.
Whether you do anything else or not.
Right,
You know, the promotion and everything of the book is 100 times harder to me than the the writing of the book was, I think. Because
right.
Because it takes a lot of time to get out there and promote a book properly.
When you have to be a salesman.
Which takes away from the writing time that you've got too. So.
Mhm. Yeah, you have to learn the balance. There's a balance. And the fact is that a lot of writers are introverts, which makes it even, mm-hmm. you know, harder because they have to learn to, you know, put on those extroverted wings and put on that face and get out there. And, you know, you are your own product. You have to be able to sell yourself. You have to be, you know, a type of salesman. You have to learn that. Otherwise, you know, you're never going to be able to relate to people. And, yeah, it's going to hurt. It's going to hurt in the long run.
Yep.
But yeah. I've noticed, too, that the more you talk to people, I think, you know, I'm an introvert, too, but the more I talk to people, the more I go to these events, the more, you know, I put on those extrovert wings, the more, you know, I went to a party recently for my cousin, and, you know, if I look back, like, 7 years ago, if I went to the same party, I would kind of keep to myself and talk to my boyfriend, and that's all. But now I was, you know, talking to more people because I'm more comfortable in my own skin, and that's because of the experience of putting myself out there. And you can get there even if you're an introvert. So.
Oh yeah, no doubt. But you know, at the same time, you know, a lot of people don't understand the kind of, you know, how mentally tiring it can be. You know, especially when you do like a multi-day convention or something like that. I mean, it can be very tiring to turn yourself on. If you're not used to being on all the time, and then you know, at the end of the day, you're kind of like, whoa, how did I get that tired? And that does happen. You know, that's one of the things. But yeah, I know what you mean for sure. And it is good. I mean, that's part of the bonuses of doing what we do is that you do learn to public speaking and. You know, and definitely come out of your, you know, how to spread your wings more, and it does have a lot of side benefits as you get into it. So I'm glad you brought that up. So we are coming up on the 3 minute mark. So one thing we always like to do is give folks a chance to find you online, so later they can investigate your work. So tell us the prime ways to find you online.
Okay, so you can go to my website, www.colleengreen.info. Spell my name, COLLENGREN.info. And I have links to my books there and my Facebook pages and information about me. So.
And, and also you have a Twitter handle, Colleen P. Green, I believe, right?
Yes.
Yes.
Correct.
Yeah, because I think I also follow you on Facebook as well. So, yeah, you've definitely got a platform building. So, that's good news. But let me give you a chance to address anything that we may not have covered on the show. Because I've tried to cover everything in your world. But if there's anything else you'd like to mention, then we've got a couple minutes.
I do have my author, Karen Casey, Facebook page, kind of going to be growing that, building that audience over the next year. And I do put posts on there, updates on my writing and whatnot. So if you go under author Karen Casey, do a search on Facebook, and my little profile pic is a pic of a tree, give it a like. I also have author Colleen Green on Facebook. That's my Colleen Green author page. People can give that a like. So I think I got all my stuff covered. So I think I'm looking at my notes now. And
well, I feel successful, and I guess all of us, the co-hosts, can feel accomplished tonight. We covered your world a little bit and got to introduce you to our audience here, which is wonderful.
Definitely.
So we definitely want to have you back for sure, and with your new releases and everything, and so definitely want to have you back again. Thank you so much for coming aboard. And I'll let Holly, yeah, because I know Holly would like to probably round it out. So let Holly, Michael, and Daniel here comment and to round the show out.
Well, I will just say that I thank Colleen for coming on. Come back, join us anytime. And if you you don't want to talk and on air all the time, you can join us in the chat room, and add tidbits or, thoughts, questions. And let me try to think here. She did say she was going to be her next showing. You're going to be at the Lexington Book Bash, and that's in July.
July 14th.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct. Yeah.
Okay, that'll be your next. And then going out here, why don't Michael and Daniel tell where they're going to be next and take it on home?
Well, I'll be at the I'll be in Fayetteville this weekend at the festival, Southern Festival of Arts, at the Bridge Park on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, signing books and talking to people and doing all that stuff this weekend. And you can also find some of my books, be starting going in some of the historic homes around Nashville area, which is a good plus for me on cookbooks and stuff. So that is what's been going on in my world this week and what's going to keep going on for a while now. So
all right,
Michael.
And Michael?
I tell
you,
Michael's asleep.
I think Michael's connection might be out.
He's in that big recliner of his, and he's gone.
I think it might have happened.
That's
oh,
the reason
God.
I have a stand-up desk.
Well, on Michael's behalf, yeah, I will say, yeah, thank you so much for joining us, Colleen. And every Wednesday, you can catch a new Star Chamber show episode at 9 p.m. Eastern. And so have a great night, everybody, and be sure to stream and download the show later. And, of course, you can always revisit our archive and listen again to tonight's show with Colleen. And covered a lot of great ground. So thank you, everybody, and good night, everyone.
Thank you, Colleen.
Thanks. Good night. Thanks.
Good night.
Good night.